Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. We aim to feature a variety of guests with roots in the Restoration tradition from Community of Christ and our friends from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. Today we have Aaron Kavanaugh on, who is the president of GALA, which is the Gay and Lesbian Acceptance group. And we are very excited to talk to her and to learn a little bit about the mission of GALA and where they're headed and where they have been. And also just to get to know Aaron a little bit more. So welcome, Aaron.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and to be able to just share in this.
Awesome. I'm really excited. And Aaron and I just met a few minutes ago, and we've been talking a little bit setting up for this, and we decided that we needed to stop talking about the topic because we were getting into the conversation a little bit already. And we're like, no, we've got to save that for the podcast. So hopefully this is very authentic and organic, and I'm looking forward to this. So let's start out. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Just a quick background of your spiritual history and your involvement with Community of Christ. And
all right. So I'm a lesbian. I've been married for 2 years now with my partner for 11. On March 18th. And yeah, so exciting. We have 3 kids, all girls, 9 months, 3 years, and 6 years, or yeah, 6 years. And so that's my family. Did not start out in Community of Christ. I actually started out as Catholic and then, converted to Community of Christ. And that's really, really central to my story. That conversion, it really plays into my ministry and who I am. And so I converted when I was 17, after a long journey. And I had to fight really hard in my conversion with my family to be able to join Community of Christ. And it was a long battle from fourth grade to age 17.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's really central to who I am. And when I converted, in that fighting, it really transformed my life because I was kind of going, in a direction that wasn't all that effective and really getting into some stuff that wasn't good for me. And then when I, found Community of Christ, I completely turned my life around and got my life back on track. And so I really, really feel strongly connected and called to this church. And then through, coming out as a lesbian, my congregation was not accepting. And so we had a lot of pain and hurt and we stayed and fought. But then eventually, when the pain and the attacks came in to my daughter, she was 6 months at the time and people in our congregation were saying that she shouldn't exist. So we left and we were really, really upset and really hurt, understandably.
Yeah.
And basically we were at the time, me and my partner were doing lots of things in the church. She was in the priesthood. She was speaking. She was running youth ministries, pretty much all of the youth ministries. And it was all taken from us. And when we were left, we were told that we could only clean the church. So we left, but God kept calling me back because, God knows better. And sometimes I'm stubborn and don't listen. So he kept calling me and I'm like, no, God, I know better. And he's like, no, you don't. I'm like, all right. Well, I'm going to be stubborn for a few more, months. And someone kept inviting us to another Community of Christ church because that church just wasn't a good fit. It was a very conservative congregation. And that was also, I guess, timelines are important. So when we did go to that congregation, it was, 7 years ago.
Okay.
So when we first came out and then, when we left, we left when my daughter was 6 months old and she's 6 now, so 5 years old. So my friend kept inviting me back and she's like, you need to go to this church. And I'm like, okay, the church that was, not welcoming to us was a city church. City churches are generally more welcoming. Cities are more welcoming places.
Yeah.
So my friend kept inviting me to this church out in the middle of the country. And like the church, like, so you can imagine, literally is between like a hayfield and a Christmas tree farm. So it is in the middle of nowhere. There's no gas stations. Like just fields. And I'm like, no, this isn't a welcoming place. So we went there, and I was wrong. I was completely wrong. And so I got loved back into wholeness, completely loved back into Community of Christ. My wife, currently serves as pastor of this church.
Oh, wow.
She had lost her priesthood when we left and we came out. She's been reordained to elder. And I will be ordained to priest in April.
Awesome. So, me too.
Yeah. So it's just a fantastic place, and they brought me back into wholeness. And so another important part of this journey is when we left that church in the interim of searching, we heard about this concept of welcoming congregations. And so we looked them up, and at the time there was two. One was in Australia, which wasn't happening, and one was in Florida. And so turned out my grandma was in Florida, and we were going down to visit her, and it was like a mile or an hour from her house, a couple miles, you know. So we went to this church, and as a result of going to this church, we found out about Gala, and we found out about, you know, what it was, and got invited, and you know, the rest is history.
Awesome.
So that was our first retreat, followed that year. And, you know, within the next 2 years after that, I was asked to be on the board. And so I've served on the board in three positions. I've been a member at large. I've been vice president, and now I'm president.
Wow. That's really exciting. And I think, well, I guess I have to wonder how that feels from going, you know, being kind of disaffected from the church to then all of a sudden finding the church again, and a place that is accepting of who you are. And then all of a sudden being, you know, thrust into this ministry that is, obviously very dear to your heart. And probably not something that you ever saw yourself doing as, you know, a 17-year-old girl that was investigating and joining Community of Christ. So that's an incredible journey.
Yeah, it felt like Otter Lake, which is where my congregation is, it felt like coming home. When we went to Florida, we didn't have a home. We'd lost our home. And so for the years between coming home, we had taken a picture of the Florida Clearwater congregation sign, and I made a magnet out of it, and we kept it on our fridge.
Oh, okay.
And it's still on my fridge to this day, so I always remember where I've been and where I am.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So tell us a little bit about Gala, any history that you think is relevant. I'm really interested in how Gala was involved with the church in the U.S., with the transition and transformation up to World Conference. So, but I guess first, what is the history? How long has Gala been around? Was it a grassroots thing that started up from the members? Just talk about that a little bit.
Okay. So we're really excited. This is the 30th anniversary of Gala. And so, you know, this year we're doing a big retreat in at Camp Donovan. And it's going to be the 30th anniversary. We're having Robin come and be our guest minister, and we're just really, really pumped about it. And so Gala did start as a grassroots, movement in Kansas City, Missouri, back in the 80s. And it started in somebody's house, and it was very secretive when it started because there wasn't a place for, you know, LGBT people to have a welcome. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, you know, they started meeting in houses. And it just grew. It's, you know, the stories of how people found Gala are just so profound. The one that always sticks with me is Alan Fiske's story. And I hope I do justice in retelling it. But he'd been through a lot and, you know, was really disaffected from the church and just really hurt and was looking for a place that he could go. And he was a nurse and he was doing CPR on somebody and a phone number kept coming to him. He's like, this is weird. Why is this phone number coming to me while I'm doing CPR on this person? And so he went and he called the phone number. And the people who answered on the other line were the first retreat of Gala in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh.
And he was in Michigan. They're like, who are you? How did you get this phone number? And he's like, he told him the story. And it's, you know, it was just incredible. So God has just worked in the, you know, in people's lives to bring them to Gala at different points in their journey and help them come back. And it's so cool to be at the podcast because Gala is about stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often our healing in Gala comes from us telling our stories. Every year we have an international retreat. And one of the central things that we do there is we do storytelling circles.
Okay.
Where we tell our stories, and in those circles, so much healing happens and that community is built and people are brought back into wholeness. So that's really profound. The retreats are a really big part of Gala because that's where we started from. So we honor that. Also, this is a really exciting time for us because we have just last year we created, reinvented our mission statement and vision statement. And then this year we did a strategic plan and are doing a 5-year plan from that.
Oh, okay.
And so that really, we really felt like we needed to redefine, you know, what are we doing? Because in light of the 2013 conference, a lot of people are like, what are you doing now? What's the point? Is your organization still relevant? And we said, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because so much work went into the 2013 conference.
Yeah.
We met with World Church leaders. We engaged in conversations with people. And we really honored that, you know, that telling of our stories. And part of that was done through our book, Touched by Grace, where we collected stories of hope and inspiration of why people stayed. And people read those stories. There's an amazing woman, Sharon Gernot, who helped give out a lot of those stories. And I know touched people's lives. And then people told their stories person to person, you know. So the writing of the stories was powerful. The telling of the stories was powerful. And we really, you know, attacked the storytelling from all sides. WCN had a binder with stories of people from, you know, from the church and how the policy was affecting them. And, you know, that's what affects people and changes their mind. You know, the policy, looking at it, you can say, this is hurtful. But when you say, no, this is hurtful to Erin. Yeah. Erin can't engage in community. Erin can't, you know, bring her kids to church because they're being, you know, people are saying they shouldn't exist. That's what's transformative.
Yeah. Oh. Wow, that's amazing. And I think that a lot of us can relate to that. I know I grew up in a very conservative house. And in a conservative religion. And so, I just kind of believed what I had, you know, had been taught. And then suddenly these people that I knew my whole life were coming out and I thought, wait, how does this jive? You know, this isn't something that's going to be, you know, in my circle of people. And, it was actually really transformative for me, on a personal level. And I mean, I always was, you know, accepting of other people, but I just wasn't, it wasn't part of my life. It wasn't part of my circle and things like that. And I think that that's like, you bring up a good point. You know, you can say that, oh, a policy is hurtful, but when it becomes personal, that's when you have to really sit and, you know, sit with yourself and see, okay, so where do I personally stand on this? Am I willing to marginalize my sister, my brother, my parent, my, you know, whoever it may be? So yeah, I love the idea that the church was transformed through story and through listening to each other and our narrative. So that's amazing. So talk a little bit more about this book then. I mean, how many people contributed? I know it's still available to read and to purchase.
Absolutely.
But yeah, talk about the book a little bit.
So there's lots of stories in there. I don't know the number off the top of my head. There's also congregation stories in there, which weren't in the first book. The first book was written by Bill Russell on homosexual saints. The second book was written by Gala. The name on the book though, we wanted to put Gala, but they wouldn't let us put Gala when we were, you know, I don't know, publishing law. I don't know all that, but they wouldn't let us put Gala on the book. And so we decided as an organization to put David Howard's name on the book because he was so instrumental in making the book. And then he passed away before he could see it finished.
Oh, okay.
And so his name is the one who's actually the author on the book, but Gala authored the book. We honored him in that way. So the stories in there just, it's really powerful. The first book that Bill Russell talks a lot about, you know, the hurt and the pain and that, those journeys that people talked about. And then the second book is the hope. Mm. And that's my perspective. But it shares, you know, why did people stay? Why is Community Christ for you? What are we doing to welcome people? How is this, you know, just such a transformative faith? And that's really powerful, the stories. And sharing those stories are what made a difference. And it's cool too, because not only did we do this at Gala, but then the church, you know, they also did this, you know, with the graceful, you know, disagreement. They encourage people to have these conversations, and Gala engaged with the church at all levels. So we did do work with people, you know, and that basic ground root level, but then we also worked the other levels because it's important.
Yeah.
So we would meet with Mission Center presidents and talk about, you know, this is what needs to be done. How can we meet people where they're hurting? What programs can we do, for at least 4 years, we've had a table at our Mission Center conference with information about GALA, about stories, giving out books, giving out resources, children's material and how to make your, you know, your children's moments more welcoming and affirming to kids because families are important. And then we also go and we've met with World Church and I sat down and met with the First Presidency back in January and talked about what can we do in our mission to help meet your needs? You know, how do we do that? And then we also talked to them about concerns that we have. How do we make our church more welcoming? How do we make our campgrounds more welcoming? How are we going to deal with these real issues? Like when we have gay and trans kids coming to our camps, and what are we going to do? How do we make them feel welcome? Because camps are such a sacred place in Community of Christ, and it's really important that they are welcomed and that we aren't just standing there with our mouth open like, I don't know what to do. And so we're developing, you know, policies to recommend on how to make those more welcoming. And we're encouraging the church to take steps to, you know, to set that example. You know, let's make SPEC more welcoming, you know, gender inclusive with our bathrooms. And so we're still putting pressure to make sure, because the work's absolutely not done. You know, our trans brothers and sisters, they still have so much work to be accepted into the church and, you know, to make sure that our buildings are accepting and, you know, accessible, and just, there's just a ton more work to be done. And so that's what we're doing. There's four pillars in our strategic plan that we're focusing on right now. We were so moved by, you know, that song, For Everyone Born, that we use the metaphor of the table. And that's what we're using to push us forward. And so the four pillars that we're going from is setting the table, creating a safe place, connecting at the table, communication, nourishing the table, engaging the membership, and expanding the table outreach. And you can read the entire strategic plan on our website, and I encourage you to do that because it's much more in depth, and we've outlined plans, goals for this year, and then we'll set new goals every year in the next 5 years so that we're really directed and not, you know, not wandering around. We want to be specific in our mission and make sure that we're accomplishing things.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think that, you know, with what the church has accomplished in the last few years. I mean, I'm pretty new to the scene, so I don't pretend to know what I'm talking about. But it doesn't stop at ordination. It doesn't stop at marriage. You know, there's a lot of microaggressions that happen that are maybe even unintended that, you know, to a completely straight person that we don't see, you know, I mean, and so to have an organization who is actively identifying those things and actively working to be more inclusive, I think is really amazing. And it's really comforting to hear that you've had, you know, meetings with the First Presidency and at all levels of the church, that it's not just, you know, this rebel group of people who are trying to, you know, whatever, but that you guys really do have support from all levels of the church. And
absolutely.
But how is the delicate balance? Because there still are congregations and individuals, you know, who aren't ready for this, who still struggle and live kind of in that faithful disagreement place. Have you met a lot of resistance, or how do you deal with, I guess, or handle, or I guess maybe even how do you, what would your advice be to an LGBTQ person that might be in a more hostile, congregation? How do you navigate those waters?
So it's hard because it's so different for each person, and each congregation is so different. So my experience in the congregation that was harmful to me is so different from, you know, other people I've talked to in GALA that have had to, you know, had congregations that were hurtful to them.
Yeah.
So you really have to evaluate your congregation and see if it's sustainable to stay. And you also have to evaluate your geographic location. So I grew up I live in Michigan, where there's like 6 churches within an hour drive of me. And that's not the case out here.
Yeah.
You know, in Utah, it's an hour between congregations typically. Is that correct?
Yeah, we mainly just have one in Ogden and Salt Lake. We have a little group in Logan and a little group in St. George, which is 5 hours away, but.
Okay. So it depends greatly on that. I think that we're starting to develop resources. I know that the Toronto congregation is trying to get more online, so that'll be a way to engage. We are also trying to, we just have other congregations, the Open Arms congregation, they put their sermons online through their group, their congregation out of Independence. So I encourage you to look for congregations that have went through the welcoming process. You know that those congregations are going to be safe. And then if you're in a congregation that's struggling, you know, faithful disagreement is huge. And maybe you can start the welcoming process. And they take you through it from being in the wilderness to, you know, being accepting. And so you can use that as a resource. And that's really helpful. If not, the conversation is helpful. Just being a person helps change people's mind. But use your resources. Don't go it alone. That's the biggest thing. If you're out there by yourself in a congregation that's not welcoming, it's so lonely.
Yeah.
And we don't want people to feel alone. And that's what we want you to use Gala for. You know, come to our retreats. We have scholarships available if you can't afford it. You know, call us. Write to us. I'm available anytime. Anyone can reach me through my email or through Facebook. And I know the other board members are as well. And so we just want to be there to support people in, you know, the real muddiness of life. And,
yeah.
And so use us, use your resources. And I guess that's where I'm at. And let us help you too, you know, with what to work with, because each situation is different. You talked about not knowing what to say and not knowing what to do and congregate, you know, sometimes that's difficult. And so one of the things that we're starting the process of doing in Michigan is Gail is going to do a training. And so we're going to do an all day training on those mini issues, you know, like maybe have an hour. It's going to be all day of mini sessions. So we do maybe an hour on how to make your building more welcoming, an hour on inclusive language, because language is so scary.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so we're hoping to, you know, to really tackle some of those fears that we have, because fear is what, you know, causes problems. So when we talk about it, we take away that power of the fear. In Gala, we're doing phone calls now with the membership. We're doing regular phone calls. We just had our first one. The next one is coming up May 22nd. Check the website for, you know, for details. Cause the time zones, it's 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, 4 o'clock Pacific on May 22nd. And we're just going to do a lot of question and answer, and we want people's feedback. So bring your direct questions. What can I do? And we'll have answers available. And if we don't, we will do the footwork and get back to you with an answer.
Wow. This is so motivating. I know here in Salt Lake, I hope that we can get a Gala chapter started. And I guess that I want to talk about that. What do you do if you want to get a full chapter started, or, you know, real tangible on the ground support? What can people do to bring Gala into their congregation, not necessarily contact them, you know, from a distance, but how do we bring Gala to our houses, in our homes, in our congregations?
Short answer is call me. So I just went through the process a couple of years ago of doing the affiliate with Michigan and did all the paperwork and did the entire process. And the process can be a little bit muddy. So I'm available. I was the contact person for affiliates before I became the president. And so I would still say, call me, or, you know, I can link you with another board member, such as Steven, who's our vice president, who this role will fall to, but call me and I will walk you through the process. I will help you do the paperwork and figure out where we start, because each affiliate has a different feel. So in Michigan, we're really spread out. We have congregations all over the state, lots of congregations, and people are really poor at getting together. And so we see that need, and that was what we heard from the memberships in Michigan, is we need a place to come together. And so we had a Michigan retreat, and that was a place that we could come together and have healing.
Okay.
We've also heard the training, which is why we're in the process of developing the training. We have a lot of young families, so we came up with some, you know, youth resources and a lot of focus moments that we use. And we provided those at our Mission Center booth. And so we met the needs there. Where in independence, you know, the people are more connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need more regular activities. So when they have had their affiliate, they're having regular events. Regularly, once a month we get together and we hang out and visit, or we go do something fun. And so it's different in each area. And I imagine Salt Lake is going to be very different than both of those. And I will help you, you know, flesh out what is your mission as an affiliate.
Yeah.
How do we meet the needs of our community?
Yeah, I like that. It sounds like that Gala is, you know, in alignment to the identity of Community of Christ, where every congregation is different. You know, every little cohort of affiliates are different, which I think meets a broad amount, you know, a broad need for a lot of people. So I appreciate that. Okay, so we've had Linda Booth on the podcast before, and she talked about the church's journey up to National Conference in 2013. So how was Gala involved with that? And I guess what was your perspective living that out and kind of sitting on pins and needles to to hear what the church's decision was and what your involvement was with that?
So, like anything, it affected me both personally and, you know, at the organization level of Gala. Personally, you know, I walk the journey that many people do. I wanted us to be included in our religion.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to get married. And personally, for me, I refused to get married because I'm stubborn until I could do legally so in my church or my state.
Yeah.
And so as soon as our church let us happen, then we started planning our wedding. So it was a really joyous time for us, but it was also really sad because both my father and mother-in-law walked out of conference when the resolution was passed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the pain of it hits home.
Yeah.
And we understand that. And so while in so many ways we wanted to jump up and cheer and clap and, you know, and I cried silently, tear of joys, but I also, you know, cried, and I think the whole board will share this. We cried tears of sadness because we'd been excluded. And so our hearts broke for those that left.
Yeah.
Because we know what that feels like to not be welcome.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, in a weird way, we still feel like we have a ministry to those people at Gala. How do we call those people back and help them to feel welcome? Because it's important that they, you know, they can be engaged in the conversation, and they need to know that we love them, even though they feel differently, you know, than we do. And we don't want to write them off. That's not okay with us.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important, personally. And then organizationally, you know, we're involved at every single conference. So Gala always has a service. We always have a booth of some sort in the diversity section. World Church always gives us a booth to share with the diversity, table. And so that was a big part of at 2013 was we had our booth and we gave out a lot of resources. We gave out pens and we gave out books and we were there to engage in conversation and answer anybody's story and just be real.
Yeah.
Because that's what people needed. They were so hurt. You know, people didn't come and say, this is my agenda. People came and said, this is a hard issue.
Yeah.
And so we really, really respected that and tried to be available at all times for it as a hard issue. We had over at the Truman Building, we had a space where someone was available to talk to people at any time that they needed to go talk to somebody from the LGBT community. And so that was something. We just were available and present so that people could come talk to us and know that it wasn't scary. Like if you were, you know, there was the ones and the fives always were meeting and the break, you could hear people walking around afterwards and, you know, where you were. And they say, I'm a one. I want to meet with the five. Mm-hmm. And so we encourage people to come talk to us that were on the opposite end of the spectrum so we could continue to understand each other's perspective and come closer to the center.
Wow. I wish I would have been around for that. I mean, I can hear it, but I can't actually envision and really, like, it doesn't sink in that can actually happen. Because, I mean, I think that this topic is so, you said, you know, it's a heart issue. It cuts at the deepest part of who we are, no matter if you're a one or a five. And so this idea that you can find common ground and that you can come together and create something beautiful, this, you know, beautiful step that the church took while at the same time recognizing the brokenness that it leaves behind, and trying to figure out how to, you know, help that and minister to that. It blows my mind that it actually can happen. It's beautiful.
It's God. It's God at its most basic. You know, none of the things that happened at 2013 could have happened if God wasn't there, you know, moving those lives and moving people. It's, you know, and looking at 2013, you know, you're just left with a sense of awe in the divine and knowing that he just was through it all.
Yeah. And I mean, it's grace in action. Like, you can't get more. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying not to cry because it's amazing to me. You can't get more real. I mean, these are real families. These are real people. These are real children. And I think that the topic has become so politicized and so polarized that we forget that these are little kids at the heart of this. And we forget that these are, you know, couples that have been together for decades and that these are people that have wanted so badly to serve their church. I'm not doing very good at holding back the tears, but,
you know,
but have wanted to serve, and that, you know, because of biases or whatever, or cultural norms have been held back. And so to have that just burst open in a beautiful way, and have hearts completely changed, I think is just remarkable.
Yeah. So your tears are like, I really want to give, you know, it's okay to cry. We've cried so much.
And I'm a crier, so.
That's okay. So am I. But that's what it is, you know, and I still cry because there's people who didn't stay.
Yeah.
You know, we had so many LGBT people who left because they couldn't stay and wait for the policy change.
Yeah.
And now we're inviting them back and trying to heal, you know, find ways to heal their brokenness because they left because they couldn't wait for their church to come on board. And I get that.
Yeah.
And we want them to know, like, we're here now, come back. You don't have to be out there abandoned. And there's people who are unchurched and as community of Christ. You know, and as Gala, we have an obligation to let those people who, you know, don't have a church right now and have left because Christianity, you know, the people in Christianity has failed them and told them that they're going to hell. And, you know, we need to fight back against that. And that's where our mission is now. You know, bringing those people back who are hurt, letting them know there's a safe community. And then, you know, also bringing those out, all the hurt, just connecting all the hurt, you know, as I'm getting caught up in my words. And that's what we're hoping to start doing and to be active in this coming up conference. And so we're still waiting for, you know, all the details to come together because details are slow. But we really hope to have a service this year that can be healing because now that we have this policy change, there's so much healing to be done, so much repair. And that's where I hope to go. And hopefully our tears can motivate us to do that action.
Yeah. Well, and now, I mean, by the time we get to World Conference, I feel like it's going to bring everything together. And what World Conference, what I'm hoping to get out of it, one aspect is this camaraderie of where the journey has taken us and to have it flourish at conference. And when you think about it, it would be a completely different conference if 2013 hadn't happened or if a different result would have happened. And so I'm looking forward to it. My family will be there. So it'll be, really exciting and I hope healing for a lot of people and hopefully kind of a journey back together in community, to fellowship and worship together in ways that will be healing. So,
absolutely.
So I want to talk, you know, a little bit, you've talked a lot about the vision and everything of Gala. I think that some people might not think that it affects them because they don't have a gay child or they don't have a gay friend or, you know, I don't know anybody or it doesn't affect me. But what would you maybe say to those people or to people who want to be a better ally, that want to maybe get more involved or maybe just don't really think that they need to be involved? Those are kind of two really different questions, I've realized.
That's okay. So, first, allies are so important. I can never state that enough. And I really want to, you know, just highlight that we need allies in Gala. And at least half of the people that are engaged are allies because that's so important.
Yeah.
And you as an ally can make, you know, a difference in those people's lives who, you know, I don't know somebody. Because I don't know him, so I don't get to talk to him.
Yeah.
Obviously. And sometimes people can't talk to me because as a lesbian, I'm too scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's frightening to talk to me. They don't want to offend me or, you know, it's not possible. And so the allies that I know who are involved in Gala, they have such profound conversations that impact lives. And, you know, they talk about the way that, you know, it affects their family, even though they don't have anybody in their family that identifies as LGBT.
Yeah.
And also I'd say too that if you don't know anybody, you probably do.
Yeah.
You just don't know it. You know, they're not out. And when we look at the larger perspective, just as a humanity issue, you know, it's the worth of all persons. There's people killing themselves.
So are there things that Gala gets involved with that are more behind the scenes, that maybe you don't get credited for or ways that you get involved in communities, you know, maybe on a secular level that, maybe people don't necessarily realize about in the church or things like that?
Absolutely. So we try to make sure that we're meeting people's needs in different ways. One thing that we do that's really cool is we do the temple planters, at the temple. We do all the planters in front of it. So all those big, you know, flower, I don't know what to call them, pots, I guess, but they're like 2 feet tall, so they're not really a pot. But those big pots that are out in front of the temple and the auditorium, we plant those and then maintain them throughout the summer. So check those out. For the first time this year, World Church Lives put a sign in them. So there is a little sign in there now that says,
"Oh, good.
It's done by Gayla." And so that was monumental for us as a board. We're like, "Woo, I get a sign!" But we've done that for years because, you know, it's our church and we want to give back to it too. So we do those little things. We donate to the Dome Inspire Project. We try to meet congregations when they have a need. We try to do those things. So we tried to respond when the policies came out here and help the Utah congregation out. And so whenever we have little needs like that, we try to just be there.
Yeah.
And whatever that they need to do it, you know, even if it's something little. And so there's that. We also do a newsletter. I didn't talk about that. Every quarter we have a newsletter that comes out with stories about the things that Gayla's doing. So one of another little action that we did is at our retreat this year, we made blankets for the homeless.
Oh,
and
great.
So I'll have that story in our next newsletter. So some of those direct action things come out in the newsletter. That's one of the ways you get to find out about them. So I encourage you to check out our newsletter. We email it out. We do send out some hard copies, and it's available on our website.
Awesome.
And so that's a really great way to stay informed.
Yeah, and up to date with what you guys are doing.
Absolutely.
Sweet. So I guess what would you say to people that maybe push back and say that maybe there isn't a lot of relevance, or maybe that they don't know an LGBT person or don't think they know an LGBT person, so it's not their problem, so they don't need to get involved, or, you know, it's not their issue, they don't need to be an ally. Sometimes I feel like there's kind of a disconnect between these two worlds, and it's hard to maybe, you know, encourage people to be engaged. So what would your response or reaction to that be?
I guess my first thing would be, you probably do know somebody.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the LGBT community often is kind of underground.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of communities we're not as visible as you would think, because for so long we couldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, there's really fear of being attacked. So I live in a really rural community in Michigan, and when my neighbors found out that I was gay, I got threatening phone calls to me and my kids.
Wow.
And so when we had to get the police involved and everything else, and so often we're underground, we're not visible because it's too scary to be visible. So I encourage you, you know, to look into, you know, the underground community and find out, you know, there really are people around, you know, we're everywhere. So for better or worse. But also, you know, we're the whole person. So even if you don't know us, you know, you can still, you know, our lives matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important, because we do other movements that we don't know people, you know, we give to, you know, people who are in crisis all over the world, you know, we give to, I don't know, I can't think of specific things, but we give to things all the time where I don't specifically know you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in Community of Christ, we're called to care about the worth of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just ask you to look at my story. So worth of all persons, you know, that's really important. And I think that you just got to remember that, and, you know, think about the stories and the people and the lives that affects. And then also think about your family, you know. You mentioned earlier talking about your kids, you know. And, you know, even as a straight person, you want your kids to grow up in a world that's accepting of whoever they may become.
Yeah.
That's so important. So, you know, try to think about the larger picture, I guess. Sorry, that's a hard one to answer, and I don't have an easy answer. And oftentimes we just don't have easy answers.
Yeah.
And that's hard to admit.
But I think that it is important to, you know, kind of look within yourself. I mean, I have friends that are gay. I don't, as of right now that I know of, have any real family members, you know, in my immediate or even, you know, expanded, extended family. But it kind of really made me watch the messages my kids were getting, because I don't know who they're going to be. And so what messages am I sending? What messages are they hearing at church? You know, that was very much part of my faith transition and my faith journey, is figuring out, okay, what kind of world am I creating for my kids? And so, I think that even sometimes if we don't think we know anyone, or maybe it's not our problem, you know, you never know when someone who is really close to you is going to come out. And so, I know for me, I'm not a perfect ally, but I definitely do try to, make it known that I can be a safe person, that I am a safe person. And so hopefully with Gayla's support, you know, Salt Lake will be able to be more of that. And I think the need here is great. And we're looking forward to partnering with you guys. And so, yeah, I guess I would just encourage listeners, wherever you are, to really look at your congregation and your community at large and your community at small, too. You know, whatever group you're part of.
Well, you can't understate, like, there is no perfect ally.
Yeah.
None of us are perfect. The only one who's perfect is Jesus. So, you know, that's just, you know, and we all try, but we're not. But, you know, allies do so much. And I think that gets underplayed sometimes. But without our allies, we wouldn't be where we are, you know, because our voices couldn't be heard for so long. So without you guys standing up for us, we wouldn't have the rights that we have today. We wouldn't be able to be married, you know. Your guys' voice is so important, and you're going to touch those people who say, I don't know somebody, because they know you. And so you telling your story and why it's important to you, that's what makes the difference. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the answer to it is calling the allies. You know, when you're an ally and you care about our community, we are so thankful, and it just means so much to us. And you have so much power that you just have no idea. So thank you.
Well, thank you for your bravery. It's, you know, I feel very, very humbled when I think about the journey that the church has taken, and the journeys that individual people have taken to lead the church into that. And yeah, we live in really exciting times. I see huge potential, for very strong leadership coming from the LGBT community in the church. And I'm just kind of anxiously waiting. I'm like, okay, keep ordaining. Like, let's get them coming, you know? I think that having very visible leadership for marginalized people is very important. And so, I'm excited. I'm congratulations on your ordination and, your wife being pastor. I think that's awesome. Yeah. And I just see a lot of really good things in the future for the church. So thank you. And thank you for coming to Salt Lake. And, your whole purpose for being here is in response to the critical need right now, for this population in Utah. They're pretty broken right now, and it's been hard to know what to say and to what to do. And so I'm really glad that you're here, and we have a fireside tonight with your guest ministry. And so I'm excited. Awesome. So thanks so much for sitting down and having this conversation with me. And yeah, thanks. And welcome to Utah.
I love it. I love your mountains. So thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ. The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ.